Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
That unconscious mind wants to stay up late while your conscious rests for a while. It's time to tune in to that show that goes beyond your regular mind perceptions. Yes, it's a late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey everybody, Greg Bornstein here. I am your host, your curator of experience, your cultural hypnotist, your consciousness disruptor. Put all those things together, you get a looper. This is the show that celebrates intellectual escapism, or is it escapist intellectualism? Anything that goes beyond the explainable. That's right, the topics that take us away from it all. Magic. Hypnosis, the paranormal, the supernatural, the mysterious, the conspiratorial, and really, who and what we actually are. I tried the whisper. Seemed dramatic. It works. Sometimes. Point is this. This is Open Loops. I'm your host, Greg Bornstein, and this is really a show where my goal is to challenge your existing belief systems by bringing on guests and sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind so you can step into the highest version of yourself. An open loop is just that. It's a unfinished thought. It's a unconscious provocation. It's a thing that makes your mind not know the answer, but by the very not knowing makes your mind grow even further. Consider it a cliffhanger, a dot, dot, dot. This show is all about those rabbit holes, the things we just want to learn more about. And today's episode fits right in with that. Today I have Clarence Mitchell, who hosts his own show, Closer Encounters Radio. He was gone for a little bit. It was a very popular show. He had people call in. Shared his experiences, shared his research on UFOs, ETs, aliens. But the show's coming back, and Clarence is back. And now that he's back, I thought, you know what? I'm going to do an interview with him, and I'm going to do it his style. This was recorded originally on Facebook Live, and I had people writing questions, and we had Clarence answer them on the spot. I hope to create a show like his where we start doing some call-in stuff. So that's in the works. Clarence inspired me. The thing that's interesting about Clarence Mitchell is that he has had multiple UFO and ET encounters, including an abduction. Now, the thing that makes him different than just your regular abductee off the street story is that this is a man who has really researched this topic in depth and knows and has interacted with the big names in the game. He's going to tell you who's legit, who isn't, and really share the key things to look for, the commonalities in a truthful ET UFO encounter experience. I appreciate Clarence's honesty. I appreciate his warmth. And I appreciate how passionate he is about getting the, let's just say, the real disclosure out there. I loved having Clarence Mitchell on. You're going to like him too. If you like Open Loops, please make sure to share this podcast with your friends, your family, your off-world relatives. Yes, I know you have some. And if you like this show, please make sure to like and subscribe or whatever they're telling you to do these days. I never know anymore on Apple Podcasts and rate the show and leave a review. Even a couple words can help. I'm very excited about this episode. You can tell I'm hopped up on energy. Why? Because maybe it's because I went to New York City last weekend and I hadn't been in a while. So now it's no longer just Massachusetts, Greg. It's tri-state area, Greg. He's a new guy. Enough of me. Here's Clarence Mitchell coming up. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. It is me, Greg Bornstein here. Open Loops, conversations that bend. I am so excited. If you're tuning into this right now, we are going to go live with the man himself, Clarence Mitchell. This is a UFO connoisseur. If you're here, it's 5 p.m. Eastern on a Saturday, and you want to get a little weird, a little extraterrestrial, I'm about to bring on Clarence, and we're going to find this man's journey out. We're going to find out where he's been, what he's seen, what he knows, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get deplatformed from Facebook. Just maybe. That's the goal. When you talk to a UFO person, it's always about the, will they survive? Will the Facebook group, will the YouTube channel, will I have to move this to Parler? It's always the fear. It's the fear. But I know Clarence himself has had a YouTube channel that he was doing a lot of live stuff for a while, and he got completely thrown. They wouldn't let him air the stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. Let's see how edgy of a conversation this gets. I'm going to bring him in right now. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein Live featuring Clarence Mitchell of Close Encounters, Closer Encounters Radio. Here he is. I'm bringing the man in. Yes, he's coming on right now. We are live on Facebook. Clarence.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Good. Is the camera actually working or not?
I do not see your camera right now.
Okay, let me see if I have to start.
Oh, yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, this is the Clarence Mitchell appearance we want. You always there want the go. Background. You want the aliens. I'm curious, where do you buy your alien paraphernalia? Is there a store you go to? What is
nothing special? Amazon, eBay, all kind of places. People send it to me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, cool. Clarence, I am so honored to I know we're live right now, so I feel a little more performative than normal, but you are. So look, I met you. You were co-host with mine at Forgery Unmasked, which was the Watchers Talk produced virtual summit. Right. We were talking ancient aliens. We're talking modern contemporary UFOs and expanding consciousness, all the kind of stuff that I definitely love. But as I was there with you as an MC the entire time, I kept thinking, this guy there is such, everybody keeps talking about him. Everybody knows Clarence has been around the field. He's an expert. He's been in it. Let's start here. I'm very curious, Clarence. First off, thanks for coming on the show. Very grateful. Well,
thank you for having me. Yes.
Yeah. Why, you know what, with everybody praising you this much as being around in the game, why is that? Over the years, how have you, what do you think your contribution is? What do you think your unique voice is in the UFO and extraterrestrial community?
I would have to say a lot of it has to do with truth. Debunking the debunkers, proving things that aren't true out there in the ufology. See, for many, many years, and it's still going on to a certain extent, even credible investigators have no clue what they're talking about. I mean, seriously, a lot of it's made up, you know?
Right.
And it really upset me because with folks like myself and people like Omar and Rob Yachts and Leonard O'Neill and a few others, you know, out there, we try to bring the truth about ufology and certain concepts, you know, that people are there's so many hoaxers out there that people are persuaded to follow that, you know? So we try to keep them on the straight and narrow as much as we can. And that's the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And plus, you know, I love people and people love me and we just have that connection, you know?
No, you do. And you seem like a very warm, approachable person in this space. Though I kept saying throughout the entire weekend, I was amazed to finally be in a collective. I think, you know, that's a good point. That was the first time that I was really in a group of people, even though it was a virtual summit, where everybody, I felt great that there was a community of like-minded people sharing these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I've never been, I mean, have you done the live conventions and stuff like that? You must have done that circuit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Sure have.
People know you from that.
Yeah, we've done many of them. Matter of fact, I was just rewatching one that Omar and I did. Well, there was a bunch of us there. It was called Contact with Closer Encounters. It was about a year ago. You know, and, you know, with Omar and Rob and Leonard and, you know, a few others, you know, we've done these kind of shows off and on for the past 3 or 4 years now. So, yeah.
So you, yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited to actually be in person with a bunch of people like this and really explore these ideas. But that said, you know what, in a way, Clarence, what do you, I'm sure it all starts with your first experience. So we're going to have to go there because I do want the story. I guess my question would be, what gives you the know-how to be able to say, yeah, I can actually credibly debunk the debunkers?
A lot of years of investigating. You know, just digging into the stuff that nobody else would. You know,
tell me more about that. What is the stuff that people wouldn't go into?
Well, name it. I mean, seriously, there is so much, you know.
Yeah.
Out there.
Well, okay. Well, let's start with the mainstream disclosure movement right now. I mean, you know, New York Times put that article out in 2017 that became a big thing for a mainstream article to talk about. Look, there's UFO footage that we have, the Tic Tac. And then this past summer, the Pentagon said, yeah, we've been looking at UAPs and this stuff for years. It's true. I mean, what is missing in the current mainstream narrative about UFOs and disclosure?
Proof.
I
know.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly? What does that mean in your mind? What constitutes
the real
proof?
Stuff, the real things. Those videos, you go back to 2017, that happened in December, just before my birthday, actually. I did a show on that. I was so pissed, excuse the language, when that come out. I did a rant on it for over an hour and a half at least.
What?
Yeah,
how do you feel an hour and a half about that rant? I mean, break it down for me, Clarence. They said that there was footage. They showed this footage, and that was their saying, hey,
yeah, but
this
that
is
footage
proof.
Was years old.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that footage long time ago. Long before they ever brought that out, but they were leading people to believe that was something brand new.
And
it
wasn't.
It was old, very old, you know.
So you're not discounting it as proof. You're just saying, is this all they're showing?
Well, what are you saying?
Oh,
because
okay.
Here's the thing about videos, especially. And you can go back and look at a lot of footage that people put up as real and whatever. Now, you can tell a CGI photo just by looking at it. After you get into it long enough, you'll know. I mean, you know, there's some definite fakes out there that just, you know, not even worth looking at right off the bat. You know, you can take them right off the top and say, yeah, we know that's junk, you know. But
yeah.
Then you get other ones, and here's the problem is they're so blurred. And the reaction of people and stuff like that, you know, in the background. I mean, there's tons of different things you really have to look at on that. But
this is a common misconception, I think, that people have about the people that explore this, and which you do thoroughly in Closer Encounters Radio, which you host. Mm-hmm. People think that it is all the people out there that are talking about UFOs are saying, yes, every single video, like this is what the skeptics say. The skeptics go, yeah, they just show these videos and they're grainy. How can we ever say anything? And they don't really take the time to look into people like you and Omar, Leonard, Rob, all these other people in the community who are saying, no, we think some of this stuff is crap too. There is the real stuff and the fake stuff.
Right.
I think that is, it's again, it's just a pattern of people's thinking. They want to generalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
What is some of the footage that you've seen? And I know you've seen some stuff in person too, but what is some of the footage that you've seen that isn't grainy that they're not talking about?
It's very, very rare. that you actually find something on film. Unless you really dig deep and go way back, and I'm saying 70s, 60s, you know, in that era, you're not going to find much, honestly, you know.
Is that for anybody's agenda? Is it because I've heard stuff about they don't want to be caught on camera, or they're so, I mean, supposedly extraterrestrials are telepathic. Therefore, the idea that you would take out a camera quickly would be immediate. You know, first off, they probably have the technology not to be able to show up on film. Mm-hmm. But then second, if we're communicating telepathically, they're going to know a human being is going to try to capture it.
Absolutely.
What is your take on why it is so hard to find the footage that's clear?
I think a lot of it is because of the hoaxes itself. Because if you had a clearer footage, then you could actually tell if it was fake or not, if you know what I'm saying.
Hmm.
It would make it easier to be able to just, you know, to debunk it, you know. So a lot of it is grainy, a lot of it is, you know, and some of the grainy stuff, the older stuff is actually real stuff, but it's hard to depict it out sometimes, you know what I mean? Because
yeah.
There is so much other stuff in it, you know? And I think they flooded the market so hard with all these crap videos that,
yeah,
you know, people are just like, wow, you know, it always leaves that confusion, you know?
Yeah. Is there a mainstream video out there right now that you can see on YouTube that you're saying, oh yeah, no. This is good. They should be showing this and not whatever they showed on the New York Times.
Mm. Right now? No.
Really?
No.
Interesting. But you've seen footage that you would say, yeah, if they put this out there, people would definitely know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
What, in what context? I want to see this stuff. Yeah. How did where did you see this?
Well, a lot of this, like I said, it stems way back, old photographs, you know, different things like that. A lot of it's been archived, and it's really hard to find some of it anymore because they've squashed it so much over the years, you know what I'm saying? Or they've covered it up with other junk, you know, that's all you see. But right now, as far as newer stuff, there's so much in our atmosphere. Starlink is a good example right now. Every time somebody sees one of their satellites, they think it's a UFO. When in reality, it's actually a satellite, you know.
That's
they even
what's
see
tricky.
The space shuttle, you know, and you got to be able to depict what you're looking at, you know.
Yeah.
It takes experience. It really does.
Okay. Then let's get into the beginning a little bit, and I'm sure we'll bridge it all together.
Sure.
When did this even enter into your life, the idea of pursuing and investigating this? How young were you? Yeah. How young were you? Did they pursue you first? When did it start for you?
It actually started way back in the mid 60s. Mid to late 60s, when we lived in an old farmhouse, and my mother and I witnessed a orange orb, reddish orange orb, out back of our house in a cornfield about 2 o'clock in the morning. pretty amazing. And that was my first experience with that. And then in the 70s, we had moved down to Florida, and I had a real real encounter.
Now what does that mean?
Well, that's first seeing the UFO.
Yeah.
Which was just, I don't even think it was 100 feet off the ground, you know, just above a tree across the street from us. And I actually think to this day that they had tagged me, you know, and they were watching me. It's what they were doing, you know.
Yeah.
And later on that evening, of course, I had my encounter, so to speak, you know, a personal encounter. And
Now your show is called Closer Encounters, which... And, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that is the Spielberg film. It is people break right. it down. And then you have Stephen Greer, who's out there now talking, you know, Close C5. Encounters. Yeah, going to that. How far have you in a way, I feel being abducted and going. I mean, yes, it's cool to be able to go out there and have your mind say, I'm going to see a UFO and then see an orb in the sky. That's what Stephen Greer is really very much showcasing these days. And he's what do you think about him? Why are you laughing at Stephen Greer? Is he an alien?
You see me laughing?
Is he a clown? What's
he's
the
a clown. He's a clown. He's he takes BS? People for a ride, takes their money.
Wow.
Talks a lot of BS.
Really?
Yeah.
You think, absolutely. Okay, let's completely rip apart Stephen Greer right now. CE5, that documentary, why is it complete garbage?
That, I don't know if you actually watched.
I did watch that one.
Okay, where they went to the beachfront.
Yeah.
And they seen the fire in the sky, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They were military flares.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he
was claiming they were UFOs.
You think he's actively deceiving people?
Oh, absolutely. And he knows it. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man, I shouldn't have shared that article before I went into this interview on Facebook. Well, he's coming out very much these days. And the reason I thought you might like him is not necessarily because he's a truth teller, supposedly, but.
When I first.
Yeah,
learned about him, I did like him.
Okay.
I was a true follower of it.
I didn't realize his narrative. I didn't realize the different narratives about extraterrestrials and UFOs. And I watched the documentary Unacknowledged on Netflix. Right. And what was interesting, it was the first time I was pretty new to the subject. The first time I'd heard the story that when there are wars on Earth, when there are nuclear power plants, when the planet's getting destroyed, of course they don't want to show up because humans are supposed to love each other. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the story he was pushing about them and saying, and this idea that it's a fear-based narrative that they're going to attack is completely bogus. So I said, oh yeah, you know what? That does feel much more in line with how I feel about consciousness in the world. Mm-hmm. But where does he go astray from that? Or where do we, you know, it's a nice narrative, but is he just peddling people for money?
He's peddling. That's all he's doing. And he's good at it. And he has been good at it, you know, and I feel sorry for those people. That's why I do what I do, you know, and I actually proved that particular sighting totally bogus. I've done a show on that. I actually showed the site. I showed where the military itself had even said it, that they had dropped flares in that area. You know, they do these maneuvers at that place all the time. That's nothing new.
Yeah.
And he caught wind of this, took people out after he collected their cash and said, now, if you just wait, you're going to see these UFOs. Let's all meditate. And right on the money, boom, there they are.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. And wow. If you ever studied flares and you ever watch how they act and how they maneuver and the whole thing, you'll know right off the bat exactly what I'm talking about. You know,
why do you think he would do? I mean, does he just think people aren't going to do the research? If he's putting these ideas out there and really trying to push this narrative that we need to be examining these things in the governments, the evil ones, right. Why do you think he would be open to deceiving people?
Fame.
It's just the ego. You know, the ego taking the ego. Over.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. How come you never hear from him or about him? And this is the same with most of them.
Yeah.
For years at a time. Then all of a sudden, you'll get Greer showing up again with another new documentary just coming out. Lorenzo, another new show coming out. So on and so forth. But you don't hear nothing for a whole year.
That's
about
interesting.
Anything.
Yeah. Who
it's
are
all
the good
on a
people?
Timeline,
you're you know? You're one of the good ones. I mean, is it just because it's more local, you know, Omar, Rob, or we're starting these? I mean, this is what I wonder. Like, what happens if someone right now were to say, Clarence Mitchell, we love you. We're gonna give you $10 million to raise your platform up. Are you gonna what's gonna happen to you? Could you be subject
to... Just give
to
me the platform. I'm happy. I don't need the money.
You don't want the money. See, now that's where it all... Yeah. Okay. Who are some of the other bigger... I mean, do you think Jacques Vallée is he doing the good work out there?
Oh, boy. That's a good one. To an extent, you know, and this is the thing with these investigators and different other people that talk a lot. I think a lot of them start off on the right track and they do the right thing to begin with. But somewhere down the line, I think it just becomes a norm for it to go in a different direction, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Commoditizing spirituality has been a theme that I've loved exploring on this show because I think it can be dangerous. Yes. But... Yeah, that is kind of true. I mean, if you're looking at Closer Encounters Radio, your show, I don't see it plastered everywhere. I don't see you going crazy, putting up ads left and right and partnering with Gaia. You're really doing it because you want to talk about these things and you're really passionate about it first and foremost. So everybody send this man money. Send the money. If he has a book, send the money, please. I don't know if Clarence is surviving. He apparently disappears for periods. See, now you disappear periods of time, but not because you're inaccessible or you're like plotting your next big business launch. Like you came back on the scene and I don't think you had a new product that you were trying to put out there. Right? You just have genuine life circumstances.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is interesting. I'm fascinated by you taking down the New York Times article. I'm fascinated by you taking down Stephen Greer.
Well, here's the thing. You can take New York Times and wad it up and throw it in a trash can or line your litter box with it because that's what New York Times is all about anyway. Anything that has New York Times name on it, forget about it. And yeah, it goes for anything, whether it's UFOs or political stuff. That's just them, you know, period.
This is the thing. I was having a conversation about this the other day. I love that the people in the conspiracy community especially said, oh, look, see, now the Pentagon in 2017, a lot of people started on the in the fringe circuit. They started saying, yeah, finally, we're vindicated, the New York Times. And then a day later, they'd say, but also Donald Trump and fake news, and we can't trust the New York Times at all, too. Right. So I'm going, well, you can't really have it both ways. If the New York Times is breaking your UFO article and you don't trust this article, then how much vindication are they giving you, really? Right. Yeah, I mean,
Guy is the same way.
Yeah. What do you think about that? David Wilcock, Corey Good.
Junk. You know all junk. Every bit of it's junk. I'm sorry. and I hate to say it that way. I hate to be so, I call it fictitious, but it's just, I want people to understand that they are being duped. I mean, it's plain and simple, you know. I even have a hard time with Ancient Aliens anymore because of their program. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. Let's talk about David Wilcock for a little bit. Did he start out in the right place? Or was he always just in it for the money?
No, actually, I think he did start out in the right place. But he got so elaborate. And I think he tried too hard, to be honest with you. To get himself out there, if you know what I mean. And once he got his foot in the door, then he just went totally nuts. I mean, it just, you know, crazy stuff. I mean, you know, come on. This is the Edgar Casey.
That's incarnation. You know? He is the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. He puts up photos of himself next to young Edgar Casey and says, look, see? How can anybody... Is there anybody out there that can claim such a thing about anyone? It seems outrageous to me.
Very, very few. And there are some cases, don't get me wrong, of reincarnation that I totally agree with. 100%.
Oh, drop a name right now. Who should we investigate if we're going to look at that?
There was a girl from, I want to say Africa. And I can't even think of her name now. But she was blind. You know, and what is her name? My goodness. I you know, I can't tell you, but I mean, it's a well-known story, you know, and she had talked about her past and about her village and about her people and stuff like that. And her mother and father, you know, they finally wound up doing some investigation work, you know, and come to find out that these people actually existed, you know, in this village and so on and so forth. She would have no clue, you know, and different other things like that. I mean, they're, you know, most of them were women. There were a couple of guys, but, you know, most of them were female. But there's, you know, there are some pretty touching stories, you know, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk more about your radar for when things are real versus when it's complete bunk. For people out there that are investigating and trying to figure out what's happening with the UFO narrative, do you have some guidelines that make you go, yeah, this is more likely to be true than false?
Well, basically, you got to take the whole story first. And see where it takes you, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know, if you hear a story and you think, wow, man, this is amazing stuff. It's just, it probably, you know, like the old saying, if it's too good to be true, it probably is, you know.
But then let's go back to your story, encounter. So this encounter that you had in Florida, right?
Yes.
What was it? Did you go on a ship? Did they come down to you? What was the experience, Clarence?
Yeah. Well, what happened was, of course, I had spotted the craft, and my sister and I were playing with a small neighbor girl that lived across the road from us. And I just happened to look up and catch this craft, you know, looking down at us, you know. And I turned to my sister. I go, hey, look at that. And when I turned back to point up at it, it had disappeared. Without a trace, without a sound, nothing. Now, it's very possible that it just miraged itself, you know, or whatever, or it may have just flew away and I didn't see it, but it was really quick. And yeah, it startled us pretty good, you know, at that point in time. And a few other things that happened. My brother came home. He was out riding his bike. At the same time, some woman had screamed, you know, bloody murder, scared the heck out of him. He come racing home on his bike. The little girl that we were playing with, her dad opened the door and hollered at her to get back in the house right now. And he slams the door shut, you know, so I don't know if they've seen this or, you know what I'm saying, but I'm just putting it all together as I go along, you know what I mean? So a lot of things had happened, coincidentally, if you believe in coincidences, at that time, that makes it pretty real for me, you know what I'm saying? As far as that goes. But then later on that evening, after we'd gone to bed and everything, and, you know, I wound up having my encounter in my bedroom, you know, pretty crazy stuff. But, you know, you wake up and the scenario, it plays out a lot like others. You know, they're pretty, pretty comparable. It's almost identical mirror image of other abductions or other, you know, ET encounters. They come into your room, you wake up, you're paralyzed, you can't speak, you can't move, you know.
Yeah.
They talk to you telepathically.
So wait, when it comes into your room, what do you, I mean, does it look like you're this lamp I see over there? Is it a little gray?
I mean, that's a pretty good prediction. Yeah. Or a pretty good
representation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
yeah.
You know, the almond shaped eyes, the grayish bluish skin, you know, a lot of people think it's clothing. I don't think so. I think they were what they were, you know?
Do you think they have the ability to morph into human? Could they show up in human form?
Well, now we're going down another rabbit hole.
Okay, fine. Don't answer that yet. Let's talk about
it. Yeah, but I will give you an example of a really good example of that. But yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. I know Augie definitely has told me, Augie knows too. We all see, he was an MC with us at Fortree Unmasked and in this field. He said at the end of the episode, he said, Greg, walk down the street. And if you see someone that's 7 feet tall, even from behind them, ask them to reach out to you. And you don't just see what happens, which made me go, okay, so there's a reptilian species he's implying, these tall people walking around the, but okay, we'll get to that. But okay, so what movie are you saying is the best represent or a pretty good representation of what you saw?
Close Encounters. The third
Close
kind.
Encounters.
Yeah, the little people that come out and take him onto the ship and stuff. You know, that's pretty much pretty close.
Yeah. Do you think Steven Spielberg, I mean, have you looked into his research for that film? I know the French guy at the beginning of the movie is based on Jacques Vallée. Right. But I mean.
Well, you know, Dr. What is his name?
Was
he
it
ran
Kripner?
Project Blue Book for years.
Oh, I forget his name. The Blue Book guy.
Yeah. Well, he was in that movie also. Heinlein. Dr. Heinlein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you saw what people in you know, what we see as the Hollywood. It does seem strange. I mean, I guess the thing that is interesting about it is that the skeptics always say, yeah, well, why do they look like what you see in Hollywood? But then.
Hollywood, though, I think they. Well, it depends on who does their research. But when you got people like Dr. Heinlein, for instance, that's in the movie itself, you know he's passing on information to Spielberg. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Yeah.
So when Spielberg says, well, doctor, you know, what do you think an alien would look like? Well, here you go. He draws him out a picture. They go from there. And yeah.
That movie, in a way, is, this is what I really think is interesting. What was I going to say about that movie? It is, the narrative of the attackers is not there, really. But when you think about Close Encounters, it is a it is kind of a loving movie. It is, they're here. Music is what that the whole sequence of playing the sounds and getting them to show up. Is that movie probably one of the better alien films in your mind?
For me, it's the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What is this War of the Worlds thing that H.G. Wells threw at us?
That was a hoax. So, well, obviously everybody knows it was a hoax and stuff like that, but you know, it was an unfortunate incident that happened, you know, but it's a true story as far as the story goes on what had happened, like in New Jersey. You know, people got killed over that deal, you know. Yeah.
Oh, you mean listening to the Orson Welles broadcast of it?
Yeah.
But, you know, even this idea of H.G. Wells writing this piece of these attackers. Have you done any research into historically looking at where that narrative of attacking enemy forces comes from?
You can thank Hollywood for that and Orson Welles and a few others. There's no real evidence other than, and here you go into the religious aspect of it, how much of the Bible or the Quran and that you believe in and read, and how you take that narratively, okay? There's no real strong evidence of War of the Worlds. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. Yeah,
this Mars attacks. Yeah, there's nothing. It does not seem that there's anything about aliens coming down to attack us, or I mean, look, when you go on the ship, what's the thing in Hollywood? They do the probe on you.
Right.
They're going to subject you to experiences. Yep. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that claim they've done that, but I bet you think those people are completely full of it.
Some for sure.
I mean, I'm sure there are people been on craft. Have you been on a craft before?
I don't remember it, but I know I have been. I mean, I know I was taken. Okay, I'll go that far with it. But the experience beyond that, I have no idea.
Wait a minute, let's go farther. You know you were taken.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt in my mind I was taken.
What now? Okay, I had someone on my show. He said that all he experienced was driving. It was in Massachusetts, actually. Driving, waking up late, seeing a light, waking up later, no memory whatsoever. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely convinced he was taken.
Right.
What makes you so confident you were taken, Clarence?
Well, because they told me, for one thing, that they were going to.
They actually told you?
They actually told me that, yeah. Secondly, I had a conversation with them about not breaking a glass shelf that I had underneath my window. Okay.
Yeah.
I had a showcase that I had model cars and stuff on. And I told him, I said, please, whatever you do, don't wake my brother up, who's right up above me in the bunk bed, and don't break this glass, because, man, my dad will be pissed. You know?
Yeah.
True story. Yeah.
And were you communicating with words, or was it all telepathic?
All telepathically through the mind. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's almost like that you're not really supposed to speak with them through your mouth, if you understand what I'm saying. It's not like you and I are having this conversation right now. You know, they spoke to me, I heard them, and I just automatically respond back, you know, thinking, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how it went.
You're making me think that alien podcasts must be super weird. What is an interview like when it's telepathic communication? That is so strange. Yeah, it's the bonding of consciousness. It's the bonding of minds. And this was just when you, how old were you again when this happened?
I had to be pretty close to 13 at that time, between 13. 12 and 13. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. You hear stories of it happening a lot with kids, in younger ages. Do you, of the stories you've heard, do you think that's a common trend?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I used to think, and I still do to a degree, that I think a lot of it is they're just testing us. And I mean that like a medical type deal, checking our DNA, checking our backgrounds, you know, checking our blood, you know, to see what we are and aren't getting sick from, or, you know, what diseases we can handle, you know, so on and so forth. And as you notice throughout the years, hundreds and hundreds of years, we've gone through lots of plagues and lots of, you know, atomic wars and all kind of stuff. And, you know, here we are still surviving. So
is there anything that you had in particular that they would reach out to you and show up when you were 13 of all ages that you believe they were interested in?
I think a lot of it was genetic, you know.
What are your genetics? What?
Well, I'm
Do you have special property?
You know, I think they were just checking me as far as genetics go and, you know, whatever. And I still think maybe my father may have had contact at one time, but just didn't really put it together. My mother, I think, also may have had the same thing, you know. I think it was kind of a family thing, but I'm the only one that actually brought it out, you know what I'm saying, and walked.
Do you remember having any moment conversations with either of your parents where this came out?
I never told anybody about this for many, many years, as far as family goes. My mother, I think I was probably late 30s when I finally broke down and told her, you know. Yeah.
And she communicated to you in a way that made you believe.
Well, she understood because of the thing that happened to us back in the 60s. And of course, my whole life growing up, I had so many different weird stuff that would happen to me. It was just strange stuff, you know.
Oh,
and when you put it together,
know.
It starts making more sense, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just crazy stuff.
But. So wait a minute. So what is the thing after the engagement? Yeah, that is an interesting thing to note. I had a conversation with in a group setting the other day with a girl that came in, and we were all talking ghost stories, and she came in and said, my brother and I saw a dragon when we were young. And I don't know how much vetting I have to do. It was a brief conversation. I really asked a lot of questions around the topic, but she says her and her brother absolutely believe with 100% certainty that they saw a dragon. It is their story. They're sticking to it. They tell people they don't like to talk about it that much.
Right.
They say, of course, that's a tactic to lend more credibility. So could be, but this is the type of person that wouldn't, it seemed, I was looking at her background and her profile to see, okay, she just
wouldn't lie about
us.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think she would.
Exactly.
So that makes me go, what is it? So you had one encounter, you had a second encounter that was actually seeing them. Was there ever a period of time after that when you were in your teens where perhaps you were going, no, wait a minute. I was a kid. My imagination was stimulated. Maybe it was a dream. This wasn't real.
Yes and no. I knew it was real. I knew it was real, but as soon as I woke up the very next morning afterward, I told myself, I said, nobody's going to believe this. I'm not going to say a word, you know. A lot of reasons, you know, my father was a pastor at the time. He was an ordained minister, you know, and stuff like that. So he had a church following and stuff. You can't have this gooky kid from a pastor, you know, coming out with this kind of stuff. It wouldn't make it look good for him either. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, and everybody thought I was nuts anyway. So, I mean, you know,
why did they think you were nuts anyways? What kind of a teen were you?
Well, I was rambunctious. I mean, I was a hellraiser, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Just stupid kid stuff. I mean, just, you know, constantly. you know.
Right.
Yeah, I was a hard one to handle.
So, and then the idea of you being this rambunctious teen bringing out that you had a UFO encounter you just thought was completely going to push people over the edge.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Because I'm wondering why it didn't necessarily push you over the edge. Why weren't you?
Well, it did. And it did. I lived with it. Well, there were certain things that would happen. And I'll take some examples here. Like, I was a punching bag for years by other kids for no reason whatsoever. You know what I'm saying?
I feel your pain, man. I feel your pain. Yeah, Keep going.
But some guys will say, well, that's just common. Is it really that common? I mean, you know, why was I always the attracted magnet dude that got all the crap? You know what I'm saying? Mm. You know, stuff like that. I was always out of place, just never fit in to any one category. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think there is a... sidebar to this, I think there is, when I think of rambunctious and I think of people who have a chip on their shoulder, oftentimes there is something inside of them. Carl Jung talks about the shadow. There's an unresolved trauma, often coming from parents. Well, it all comes from parents, that gets transmuted into being angry and wanting to, you know, not having a proper way of dealing with social grace, if you will, because you want to try to prove something to the world. Now, I would say that in some ways I was rambunctious too, but not in that way. I just always like messing with people's heads and just disrupting. I mean, that's what my whole mission with the show is, disrupting consciousness. I mean, I suppose it's class clownish behavior. You know, the comedian is a good example of someone that could be considered rambunctious, but right. I never felt that growing up. I still always felt what you were describing, which is being an outsider and using provocation in right. a skillful way. Maybe it wasn't skillful at times, but trying to be skillful with it as a way of making an impact and having a voice. Right. Because when I talk to you, I mean, you radiate so much love. You know, which I really do feel, you're a really warm person. I mean, do you think that you had unresolved egoic stuff that led to the rambunctiousness, or was it similar to what I'm describing, which is you just felt differently, therefore
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much how to describe it. I mean, you know, I think back on it now. And I grew up in rural areas, you know, for the most part, different things like that. Now, was that part of it? I don't know, but I couldn't really complain about my upbringing.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, there was nothing. I wasn't beat as a kid. I wasn't neglected and sat outside in the cold, or, you know, I was always well fed, well clothed, well,
yeah.
You know, I had anything I ever wanted, so to speak, you know. And I got a lot of, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, I had a lot of love in my family. I can't, you know. I mean, yeah, if I did something wrong, I got my butt kicked, but, you know, who wouldn't? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Back in that time, it was, you know, totally different.
And the reason so this was the sidebar, but I want to bring it back. The reason I was asking about this and sharing my story is that I wonder, we'll put it this way. Do you ever meet a really angry, completely narcissistic, evil, like, I guess narcissistic isn't the right word. Do you ever really meet a bully at school, for the bully in high school that was pushing kids around, who also was encountering UFOs on a regular basis? I don't feel like you do.
No.
There is a, yeah, that's the thing. I feel that you were somehow, they wanted to reach out to you because there was a core, and this is, I can't really describe it. There is a core soulful position. There is a light inside right. of you that they recognize and were curious about. And it makes me wonder, if, from all the people I've talked to, and I know somebody in the comments mentioned Terry Loveless. You know, I know Diane Tessman, who reacted to this. Similar people who I've heard their stories, and they seem more credible. There is a light inside of them often that seems curious to the watchers. I mean, have you looked into that? Why do you think, in general, what are the general trends of the type of people that they like to have closer encounters with?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say they have a an aura about them. You know, or aura, I guess that's how you say it. Well, okay. All right, I'm trying to figure out how I can actually explain this. I have like a sixth sense to me. Okay. My anxiety level is like a meter. Okay. I can walk down the street and there'll be a group of people on either side or whatever. And I know just by looking and, you know, feeling this vibe, whatever you want to call it, that that group of people there, stay away from. These people over here are okay. You know what I mean? Particular people that you just run into, like in a store or something, you just get that sense that, man, there's some nasty stuff going on with this person, you know, without even knowing them, not even talking to them, but you can feel this, you know what I mean? And that's, I think what a lot of that is the projection of yourself, you know, that you have throughout your lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think that gravitates to everything. You know?
Right. So there's an into that. That's what you're really saying. People that are in tune with their intuition, and why some people have that versus some people don't is a whole another discussion. But yeah, people that are often intuitive, that can sense things that others can't, even on a very rudimentary, you know, prey versus predator street situation like you described. If you're much more in tune with it, for some reason, it seems that these entities enjoy playing with you, enjoy meeting you, enjoy looking at you. Yeah, that is so fascinating. I really, it's curious to me. I wonder if the if they were ever to meet in the sky somewhere and have a meeting and go, you know what, let's engage with the closed off people for a little bit. You know, we've done enough with these weirdo sensitive types. Like, what if we just handled those people, the real troubled ones, and shook them out too? I don't know. It's interesting that
I think they do in a sense. You know, I think there is interaction with those other folks, you know, that we're describing or whatever. But I just think that those other folks just don't, you know, they're so shut off or out of tune that it just doesn't connect with them, you know?
Yeah.
Or if it does, they just don't care, or they just, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to explain in a sense, but yeah.
So you knew, okay, so you were holding this thing inside of you in your teens. You didn't tell people, but you knew in your gut, you knew it was real. You knew what you saw. You knew that they told you that you had, let's get back to that for a second.
Sure.
They told you that they were going to take you on their ship. Other things?
Here's what they said to me to begin with, because when I woke up and they were there, I tried to holler for my father and my mom and stuff, and I couldn't speak. And I was just totally immobilized. You know, you just can't move. I'm struggling. some people call that sleep apnea. If you ever look that up, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about.
I know it too well.
All right. Okay. Same kind of feeling, same kind of scenario, except these are gray aliens I'm dealing with. They're not ghost and not, you know, succubus and whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's where I kind of draw the line on that. You know, people say, well, you just had an episode of sleep apnea. Really? Okay, so why would I see a gray alien when I didn't even know what one was or looked like? Why would that appear in my mind?
Right. Oh, so you didn't even really? So you had not watched The Twilight Zone or any of that kind of stuff where they show?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you know, a Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz compared to a robot. You know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right, right.
You know the difference, you know.
So you're,
and those kind of movies back then weren't really out yet. I mean, there wasn't much about, I mean, other than the real fakey space stuff like Lost yeah. in Space and stuff like that. That's, you know, you look at those shows compared to what we got now. Not even close. You know what I mean?
That's kind of true. That's funny. This yeah. idea that even the way pop culture showcases even the way pop culture showcases aliens has evolved yeah. To reflect the truer experiences of people. There's been a melding of the truth and the fictional. But okay, so you have this experience mm-hmm. where they're telling you, they're taking you. Wait, did you tell me what exactly they told you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So anyway, they told me, you know, to calm down, that they weren't there to harm me. That was the first thing that they said, you know, and they actually called me by name, you know, my first name, you know. And it was like within seconds of that, I had this calming effect just come over me. And I'm like, wow, okay, cool. You know,
yeah,
what's up? You know, and they said, look, you know, we have some things that we want to show you. We have some things that we want to give to you. And that was one of their things that really struck me. And I didn't know what they meant by that, you know. And I said, okay, well, before we leave, you know, make sure you don't wake up my brother and don't smash the glass, you
right.
know, and that kind of stuff. And, you know, away we went, you know.
So wait a minute. So, and you do not say you have any conscious memory of what actually was happening on the ship, or do you?
No, none.
Huh. Did you come away with any markings, anything like that the next day?
You know, I really couldn't tell you because, as far as I can remember, I never looked, but I never had any hurt feeling, like I got banged up or anything like that, or you know what I
you
mean?
You don't have the implants, mm-hmm. the Whitley Shriever
right,
thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know.
What do you think of Whitley's story?
Brother, I don't know.
Oh, we're just gonna take down all the big names right now.
Well,
no, I don't know. I don't know either.
Here's the thing about that is, you take people like Dr. Lear, okay? And I don't know if you know who he was, but he used to take implants out of people.
Mm.
All right. If you ever watched the documentary, what was it, number 7 or something like that, or patient 17. All right. Of course, that guy that did that also, I'm not too fond of, but that's another story.
Wait, is that Jeremy Corbell? Did he do
yeah.
that one?
Yeah,
oh, I'm curious. The war of the UFO bearded men. I want you two to go against it.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and he just come out with something new also. So there you go. All these guys now are starting to come out within the next, well, from last month to this month to next month. That's all you're going to see now. So keep your eye out. Mark my words. Every one of them are going to come out now.
Right now, Bob Lazar, real or fake?
Both.
Oh my gosh. Okay. No, we'll hopefully get
yeah.
there. Okay. So wait a minute. So Dr. Lear was taking out implants, stuff like that.
Right.
And what is your general view? So that to you constitutes, oh yeah, people, this, there's no other explanation for this. You think Dr. Lear's work was legitimate?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do. I mean, this guy went above and beyond, you know, what anyone else would do as far as that go. He was the only one in that field, period. And no one's taken it up since.
Yeah. I do have somebody in the comments here. who is watching live, asking, do you have any of the things that they gave you? Did they give you anything?
Not as like a personal effect, you know, like
an artifact
or anything.
Yeah, right.
Everything that they give me has to do with me personally, as far as my mind, my feelings, my aura, you know, that kind of thing.
Who was Clarence Mitchell before the encounter, and who was he after?
Before the encounter, I was very rambunctious, hard to handle.
Yeah.
Literally, my dad, and I'll give you an example of this. When I was younger, he used to put me on a dog leash because I would not slow down.
Oh, my
gosh. Seriously. True story. I think he invented that. When you see people walking around with dog chains on their kids, that was my dad. He did that. Yeah.
That is so funny, because we joke about, we did that once with one of my sisters in Disney World just for one trip, when I'm not even sure it was because we were afraid she was going to run away. But in retrospect, we always joke about how, why did we put a leash on one of my sisters? You think,
well,
your father is responsible
for
this?
I drowned because of it one time. That's why he did that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We were at a campsite and we were going to go swimming. And I ran ahead of everybody, and I ran out to the end of the dock, and dad's like, don't do it. And I jumped right in like an idiot.
Oh, my gosh.
I went down three times, and a girl in an inner tube grabbed me by the hair of my head and held me up till my dad got there. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. And, so you were hard to handle, rambunctious yeah. kid. And yeah. then after the encounter.
Not so much rambunctious anymore. Let's put it that way. I had more of a down to earth thing. I mean, I still did some stuff, you know, but not.
You felt
the
they changed you. They gave you something that.
Oh,
you didn't
absolutely.
Have
yeah. And I think a lot of it was a calming effect, so to speak, you know, growing up.
That is so interesting that people are spending thousands and thousands of dollars with child psychiatrists and getting
Been
them
done that.
Pills and stuff like yeah. and you know, Advil and stuff like that. And you just want to reach out to the extraterrestrials to see if they can. Seems yeah. like it's a quicker fix.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Get them in tune.
Yeah. Yeah. So they gave you this calming effect, this drugless calming effect, which is pretty fascinating. And then you mentioned earlier that you started having more things happen in your life
yeah.
that further confirmed that.
Well,
this,
okay. These, yeah. Get back to these gifts, and I don't mean to cut you off, but.
No, tell me, please.
I became
do.
An artist. I could draw. Just by looking at a picture in a book, and I could sit there and draw this picture on another piece of paper.
That was something you couldn't do before.
No, absolutely not. I became a poet. I could put rhymes and stuff together, you know, different things. Animal magnetism is a big one.
What? That's what they used to call hypnosis. Mesmerism came from animal magnetism and then became hypnosis, what do you mean by it?
Okay. I can walk into a set of woods.
Yeah.
And I could have a bear literally come up and sniff me and walk away. Seriously.
What is happening? That is it just you are naturally magnetic to animals, or can you actually, are you tapping into something?
I think that I actually have this aura of, well, see, animals only attack because you're afraid or they're protecting something. And when they smell me or they see me or however it is they do their connection, they know that nothing is to worry about when I'm there, you know.
What? Do you think there is any connection to, are the alien... I was going to ask, I wonder if there's a connection between animals and these entities you've encountered. Do they know that you've been ordained in a way by the higher beings? So they're
I think what it is I think a lot of it is animals have these six senses.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just Well, okay, for instance, let's say you got a neighbor that's got a vicious dog, okay, and nobody can get around him. You know, you might be playing baseball and knock a ball into the yard. Nobody wants to go get the ball. I would. Because the dog wouldn't bother me, you know, those kinds of things.
And this, again, was something that you didn't experience prior to the encounter.
Right.
This encounter thing, people need to. Now, look, Stephen Greer saying you could go on a meditation retreat with him and you're going to start having these encounters regularly.
Yeah, as long as you give him a whole bunch of money.
do you think there is a. Could there be a movement? I feel that there are certainly various cults out there that say
there are. Look, yeah, at Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You want to encounter. They're actively saying do these things, and you're going to encounter this higher force that's better than anything you've been told on Earth. Is there? I mean, look, it sounds like an amazing thing to experience these gifts that you wouldn't normally experience. Is there a way to consciously go about contacting extraterrestrials so that
I honestly don't think so.
Yeah, why not?
I honestly believe to this day that you are chosen, period, that you cannot just conjure up or meditate and talk to them. They come to you for a reason. And that is the quest, is what is the reason? Why did you get this contact?
Have you figured it out for yourself yet?
Not necessarily, but another gift they give me, of course, is the gift of thought and deep thinking and different things. And I've come up with theories about certain things like wormholes, personal portals and stuff like that, that I am connected to, that I'm still researching in. That I think is something, a path into the truth, so to speak. And because I'm at the stage where I'm at in this timeline, this time of life, is the time for it to come out, you know what I'm saying? Or bring it out to the people, you know, or try to.
Yeah.
Things like that.
You know what? There are a lot of great questions right now in this live chat. Couple of questions. I mean, let's see. Oh, someone asked about your relationship to, and this makes sense. You know, this is a really good question about not feeling animosity towards these beings, not feeling if you did feel any anger or sadness.
Nope.
None.
I'm hoping they come back. I mean, that's the thing. I want to sit down and go, look, dude, what did you do to me? I mean, come on, you know, you got to give me more.
Sounds like a great thing. I mean, yeah. I'm almost there's a sad part of me that's going, why haven't I been chosen yet? Come on.
Everybody says that.
Yeah.
I'm serious. You would be surprised if people say, I want an experience, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want you to have one. It's a waiting game, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though I will say, I mean, I'd like to think that the fact that I've dedicated several episodes of this podcast to this topic might score me some points.
Sure has. Yeah.
Come on, guys. I'm talking about you. I'm giving you some FaceTime here.
Absolutely.
But I mean, this is I suppose. Well, and this is also what people are trying to do with having these conferences and summits and being more in the mainstream about these topics. I think there is a desire. And again, I don't know if they buy this collective desire, but there is a desire to consciously bring up the presence that was locked away for so long, distorted truths, in an effort to tap into something that, as you've spoken to me about today, could genuinely change your life and give you skills that you never had before, a real source of transformation that is unexplainable. I think people are starting to get in tune to that. I'm curious if you think it's all for nothing. Like, could it just fail completely? All these awakening summits, all these.
No, because
I don't know.
I don't think so, because the more it happens, the better off it's going to be as far as that goes.
Yeah.
You know, now you step back and look at what's happening in society today, in our own government, in our own statehoods and look at the change of events that's happened just in a few years. You know what I'm saying? Wow. Who would have thought, you know, that we'd be going through this, you know,
yeah,
crazy times. I mean, and some people are actually saying, oh, this is the revelation, you know, this right. is the end times, you know. Well, it's not. It may seem like it. It may feel like it. It may look like it, but it's not. There's a long, long history to go yet.
Yeah. Trust me. Well, tell me this. I do want to move more into the synchronicities in your life and the coincidences that furthered your path to discovering what your purpose is. But when was the first time you encountered someone that had an experience similar to yours and you could really bond over it?
Okay. And this wasn't a personal encounter with this person, but this was my confirmation that I got that this was real and it did happen. I had just gotten out of the military. I was in my mid-20s. Our firstborn had already been born and stuff, you know, whatever. And I'm not sure if our second one had been born yet or not, maybe. But I was home babysitting because the wife at that time, she worked night shift. So I was home babysitting and I decided to watch one of these programs like In Search Of, you know, with Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard
and stuff
Nimoy,
like that.
I was going
right.
to say that's, okay. yeah, very
and
popular.
And they had a segment on about alien abductions, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, yeah, let's see what's happening.
Now, wait, had you told anybody else at this point? Does your, not even your wife, your child, your, no one knows?
Nobody knows. Nothing.
Interesting. Okay.
No. So I sit down and I click on this thing and I'm watching it. And this particular gentleman come on, and I kid you not, his story was so mirrored image of mine that I damn near passed out. The anxiety level just went through the roof. It was like you've never, it was that very moment I knew 110% there's nothing fake about what happened. No way.
What? Wow. What was it that this person said specifically that made you?
Everything. Know? The whole scenario that he went through.
It was the identical thing.
Identical scenario was mine.
In bed, telepathic.
Through the window, waking up, being paralyzed, can't move, can't talk.
Yeah.
Three gray beans, you know, to talk, going through the window, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Nobody, and I'm going to tell you this, Greg, with all the bottom of my heart, nobody could ever come up with a story identical to mine. Out of all the millions and millions of people in this world, there's nobody that could sit down and tell my story through their mouth. And he did that.
Wait, so do you have the name of this person? Did you ever?
No, I wish I did. You know? I've even tried to go back and archive this to find out what program that was. I've been through all the In Search Of movies I could find and stuff and couldn't find it, you know.
I know in your YouTube channel, I figured you would on your YouTube channel. I was watching one of your videos, an episode of Coaster Encounters Radio, and you actually aired an older documentary about UFOs and you were doing commentary about it. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how much was out there in a way. Maybe it was misinformed at some of the content, but you know, once in a while NBC did drop a documentary on a Friday night that was about a topic like this, or 2020 would do a talk about these kind of things. Who do you think was behind that back in the day? Was somebody trying to get this out there? Was it just for ratings? Most likely it probably was.
Sometimes it was. Sometimes it was. Sometimes it was for disinformation also.
Yeah. So do you think Leonard Nimoy was one of the good ones?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think he was. I'm still kind of iffy about his partner, but
Shatner?
Shatner.
Yeah, he does. Doesn't he do a show now where he explores these topics?
The Unexplained? Yeah.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. You know, he's just following Nimoy's footsteps.
I kind of feel like he's always following Nimoy's foot. You know, I heard George Takei was, I mean, when George Takei was on Howard Stern's show, and always Howard Stern asks him about Bill Shatner versus Nimoy and the tension there. And there was a story about, I think it was Life magazine or Time came to the set of Star Trek and wanted to do a special on just do a photo shoot of Spock putting on the ears. It was just a spread about the ears, and immediately William Shatner went to whoever his agent was, maybe even Gene Roddenberry, and said, "I will not continue working on the show unless all press is about me and my character." And wrote that in the contract, completely shut down the story, and Leonard Nimoy had to deal with that.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Exactly. But do you think Shatner is spreading disinformation about UFOs, or you just think of the more people with integrity in this business?
Exactly.
Leonard Nimoy. I feel that too. I feel that he was somebody that
he was the Art Bell.
Yes.
Of that.
Love him.
Of that time. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying Art Bell was 100% ordeal either, because Art Bell had his moments. He spoofed people. He did. Okay, but that's radio for you. I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying, not that I'm trying to excuse him, but radio in that time, you had to have a little bit of fictitious comedy, whatever, to keep the ratings going, obviously.
Right.
But for the most part, he was pretty up and up, you know what I mean?
I'm all here for,
he was a pioneer.
People that are talking about this stuff when other people aren't. I'm sitting here going, yeah, it would have been great to talk about this 10 years ago and start a podcast as opposed to now when everybody is. But at the same time, you know what? Why not?
More
people need to know about it. And, you know, let's move into what happens after you see this person, because, I mean, do you tell your family about it? Someone is actually asking about this. The moment when you finally told your family, and if, because you told your children, if you did, would they experience something like that too? I mean, did you ever talk to your kids? And
nope, never did.
So you watched the show and you sat there and went, yeah, no, this is correct, but I'm still not telling anybody.
Right. Pretty much. Yeah. I still kept it quiet to myself for a long, long time, you know.
Yeah.
But it was just a personal thing, you know what I'm saying? Knowing that I wasn't going totally bonkers, or, you know what I mean? Knowing that now there's other people out there. Now, believe it or not, I didn't even know at that particular time. Now, we're talking 1986-87, when I actually got my confirmation, I had no idea who Betty and Barney Hill were.
I was about to ask.
I had no idea who whatchamacallit was from Fire in the Sky. Right. I had no idea who Linda Moulton Howe was.
Right.
I had no idea who Art Bell was. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I kind of knew who Art Bell was, but I didn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't following the ufology science thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Now, that to me lends more credibility to it. So you're keeping this story inside of you. You're not really well versed or actively, I mean, when did you start reading about it? How long after the confirmation of the story did you go, okay, now I'm actually going to pick up a book on this and see what's going on?
Well, yeah, it wasn't too long after that I started sneaking into the library, you know, literally.
I'm sure.
Making sure no one's seeing me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to explain to somebody what I'm actually, you know, doing here or whatever, you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had a friend, I went over his house. He had a bunch of psychic books on the wall. And I just said, hey, you're also intellectually interested in psychics like I am. Why is, and he said, Greg, why do you think I have these books?
Yeah.
And that was the moment I said, oh, wait, yeah, I guess I should have just assumed that you've been experiencing some things. Yeah, so that totally makes sense to me. You don't want to, you're not putting it out there in the public because people are if you're sitting there on a Sunday and reading a book about Betty and Barney Hill, as opposed to the newspaper, your kids are going to have questions.
Yeah.
So you do read these books, you sneak, you look at them. Mm-hmm. Where does that bring you next?
Microfish.
what is that? Microfish.
Oh no, Greg, how old are you?
At 32.
When are we don't know what a microfish is?
I really don't. I'm embarrassed right now.
Oh dude, it was our first
I've never heard of that one. I know what a typewriter is, at least.
Microfish, microfilm.
Oh. Okay. Starting to, interesting.
What it was it, you got, you ever seen an 8mm movie?
Yeah.
Same kind of concept, okay?
Okay.
You had every publication of magazine or newspaper on these film canisters.
Interesting.
And you would sit there with a projector and you would reel it.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard of this.
Every article and every... That was our computer of the day.
Wow.
Yeah. And I spent hours and hours and hours and hours reading microfilm. Yeah. And articles. And yeah.
Yeah. So you're going through all the articles. Yeah. I mean, look, I've heard people tell me before, Clarence, and, you know, certainly you can talk about this now when there's so many different people's agendas coming in, that to start researching, to read what other people are saying, mm-hmm. is going to perhaps ruin the direct experience, the real understanding of what these entities are. You know, I think the idea of acquisition of knowledge being a threat to your perception filters of what's true and what isn't is more of a threat now than perhaps it was then, especially with a topic that was so rarely discussed. But as you were consuming this knowledge from other people's experiences, do you remember at all what it was doing to you? Was it only expanding your mind? Was it making you question it? Could you tell that other people were coming in with agendas? What was that actual experience?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, I guess. It's really hard to kind of pinpoint one thing or another. I had a thirst for knowledge, that's for damn sure, because now that I knew my thing was real, I wanted to see how many others had the same experiences or, you know, some of the older stuff, you know. Then I came to realize by the microfish and later on my first computer that, you know, these photographs and stuff I was seeing from the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s and stuff. Wow. You know, now a lot of people don't realize, but back in the 40s and stuff, especially after Roswell happened, there was a rash. And I mean a rash of conferences about UFOs and stuff that nobody really talks about.
Oh.
But you'll find old film footage of some of these conferences where these people were dressed up in Indian headdresses and different, different things like that, and being interviewed by other NBC and ABC guys, you know, this kind of stuff. You know,
wow.
There is tons of it out there. Yeah. True story.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. You do see in the documentaries, the general and the army saying, well, yes, we have encountered flying. I'm just doing a Kennedy right now.
No, you're right.
John F. Kennedy. But yes, we do see flying saucers in the sky. And and you go, OK, well, because this is on grainy footage of a person and they're talking about it, clearly there is something here.
Well, the War of Los Angeles was a true story. That actually happened, you know, you had 15,000 shells raining down on the city of Los Angeles because they seen something in the sky at night, you know, and thought it was a Japanese invasion, you know, or something, but they couldn't hit it, you know? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So this is happening. And do you feel that back then it was, I mean, you said that obviously with Project Blue Book, there was a bit of distortion going on and
yeah.
a bit of agenda pushing, but at mm-hmm. least this sentimental part of me, the part of me that wants to think that America was a little more innocent back then, though clearly it couldn't have been with Hiroshima, but still right. there's a part of me that thinks that at least with these topics back then, there was less of a desire to get people to watch Gaia and make a quick buck. Right. And it was a little more, if you're going to put an article about this, chances are there was,
well, back then there was an agenda. There wasn't an agenda to make a quick buck on it.
Right. Right.
You see what I'm saying? That actually didn't start until the 80s. You know,
do you feel like you lived through it? You were oh, in this absolutely. Period, you were looking at it, it was legit, and all of yeah. a sudden someone said, oh, you know what, there's some, let's get absolutely this.
Yeah.
What? Wow. Okay. I don't know if that's jumping the gun too much, but I do.
No, but that's, you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What was the, I really want to know the moment that you saw that happen for the first time. What happened? So, but I think we can build to there. So you're doing the research, you're looking at the microfilm and seeing all this stuff come in. You're seeing all these encounters, there are conferences that were happening.
Yeah. Cattle mutilations was a big thing.
Yeah, for people that don't know what that is exactly, because you hear it all the time, what's the general idea behind that?
The general idea behind it, when it first started out, nobody knew, but they thought it was a cult, you know, people going out killing these cows and drinking their blood and cutting off certain parts and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They thought it was a nationwide epidemic. You know, right. That's how it actually started.
Was it? Did people think it was part of the satanic movement? That always right. gets a lot of
yeah.
Interesting. So, yeah. So they're saying, okay, people are meeting at night, doing these gross
cow tipping, and yeah,
yeah, cow tipping, cow mutilation.
Right.
Then, when does it become about extraterrestrials?
In walks Linda Moulton Howe. Yeah.
She was really the one that made people go, no, wait a minute.
Well, she grabbed a hold of it. What happened was there's a few scientists that actually did some autopsies and stuff and seen that there were, it was like crop circles, okay, which is another big thing that was happening mm-hmm. back at that time. yeah, I mean, there was so much going on. Yeah, I'm serious. When you stop and think about it, the 70s and 80s, especially in the 80s, you know, with the cattle mutilations and the crop circles and all of a sudden all these other abductees and stuff and that were starting to come out. It was being flooded. You know, we had NAP, right, with your buddy.
What, Stephen Greer?
Stephen Greer. You know, we had all of these, the Wilcoxes and, you know, everybody all of a sudden was coming out, you know. And it was just, yeah, overwhelmingly nothing but UFOs and aliens and, you know,
yeah,
autopsy, alien autopsy made a big hit. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Oh, gosh, wasn't that a show?
On and on and on.
Yeah, alien autopsy. Oh, boy. Yeah. Was there, in that time, I mean, we talked about people making a quick buck off of it. What do you think the higher ups, the government agenda was going? What were they doing with the rise of the big UFO popularization in the 80s?
I blame the government for it.
Oh, and why is that?
Okay. Without explanation, I will tell you to watch a documentary called Mirage Men.
Mirage Men, as in the Mirage in Vegas, MIRAGE. I'm going to check that out.
Check it out. It's an older documentary. Not older. I'm saying probably back in the 80s. Okay. Yeah. And watch that. And you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. That's wow. That's like the Holy Grail.
Mirage Men. This is so there was big hair and big government agenda back then. That was why that's so no one talks about the great government UFO disinformation movement of the 80s as much in openly these days. But no, that's so okay. So you're starting to see it, but there's also this you blame the government for it. Was there good that came? I always think when a government, I mean, I guess, yeah, no such thing as bad publicity. Tell me this. Right. There's no such thing as bad publicity, as they say. But what is bad publicity for the UFO movement? I mean, you mentioned War of the Worlds. That seems bad. But in terms of the
But
the
that
80s,
was an innocent bad. I mean, that, you know, that was just Hollywood making a
buck. They didn't know.
It wasn't about you know, trying to convince people that aliens were bad, even though it probably did. War of the Worlds did that for them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
but they were just out making movies. I mean, it was an innocent time as far as that goes, you know?
Right.
It never started really getting super involved until the Betty and Barney Hill case. I think that was one of them that really knocked it out of the ballpark.
That
was 1961. So
my grandfather
and Roswell
passed. My grandfather Herbert Stearns passed away. He was a biblical historian, American historian, was always interested in these topics too. Benny and Barney Hill was the one for sure, and the thing that he told me about the story that will always stay with me is that the military, one of the researchers, the psychologist that was really digging into their records, having sessions with them, just looking, I think more so listening to the tale, but also spent time with them. Mm-hmm. He said, I can't tell you if what happened was true myself, but I can tell you with 100% certainty that they both believe it is.
Absolutely.
They are thoroughly convinced. There is no doubt in my mind. There is nothing there. They absolutely believe it. What do you think is remarkable about the Betty and Barney Hill case?
Well, that's just it. All right. And here's my question to folks that actually along that lines is, how do two people feel that way about such a subject? What makes them feel that way?
Do people try? What are the debunkers saying? Oh, they just made this up. They're trying to get press. What are the common criticisms?
Well, back then, of course, you have to remember who they were and what they were. You know what I'm saying? They were biracial, married, black husband, white wife. He worked for a post office, very legitimate person. He was an outstanding person in his community. He did things in his community for other people. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like they were, you know, all of a sudden on the thing to try to make money or do whatever. That's not what this was about for them.
Yeah.
This was a true experience. And they had, you know, questions. They wanted to know why.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So when you saw that story really blow up, it almost feels as if that was the moment for you that other people in the community had when they saw the story come out in 2017, they're getting vindicated. But back then you see the story. I mean, do you remember that moment where you first encountered the story and you went, yes, this is it. The fact that this is out there is going to change the game.
Yes and no.
I know. I'm always putting experiences out there. Yeah. I mean, what was it for you?
Excuse me. Well, that's a good question. Oh, man.
Do you remember where you learned about it? I mean, I don't imagine it was on the microfish.
Some of it was. Some of it was.
Okay.
Yeah, some of it was.
Betty and Barney Hill was getting documented back then. Was there a big documentary in the 80s that came out about them or?
I'm trying to remember if there was or wasn't, because they basically they would show up in documentaries talking about well, like In Search Of and things like that, they would go back to the older times, okay? And yeah. they would show pictures of a lot of famous pictures that we see now that are black and white were one of their headlines, you know what I'm saying? The Roswell crash was a big one. That was like the holy grail of all things that ever happened, you know?
Yeah.
And then right after that, Bill Maher, the late Bill Maher, did a book about the alien from Texas, you know, with the crash there that happened in the 1800s.
Oh. You know,
which made big, big headlines, you know, big news.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But this is a time I'm right in the middle of a flood of things happening, you know, and it was a very crazy time.
And you still haven't told your when do you tell your family? When do they find out?
I never told anybody in my family until I was about 35 years old. And that was my mother. And I only told her because she was with me on my very first encounter, you know.
Huh. I mean, does anybody in your immediate circle, kids, wife at the time, you know, I have no idea what your no idea what your personal situation is, so I didn't make it not to make it sound like that. But you know, you mentioned having this family, those people that were close to you, mm-hmm. at the time when you watched the Leonard Nimoy documentary and confirmed things. Do any of them know about Closer Encounters Radio, Clarence Mitchell, this UFO guy?
I lost contact with my children and stuff years ago and different thing. I mean, I've had a messed up life. My whole life has been kind of screwed up. Okay. Personally, I mean, that's just the way it is. Life is life.
Yeah, of course.
You just deal with it, you know. Whether or not they know because of my radio show, I have no idea. Or because of my Facebook page or whatever, maybe, you know.
It's really just your mother.
It's never been talked about, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think the reaction would be?
Quite honestly, I have the faintest.
Have you ever thought about if they all of a sudden you heard from a kid and they said, hey, dad, I just started listening to Closer Encounters Radio. How would the rest of that sentence go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you probably
did it really happen? Yeah. Would you like me to explain it to you?
does a dad explain? Look, it's hard enough for them to explain the birds and the bees. How do you explain the birds, the bees, and the grays?
Well, they're in their 30s now, so I mean, you know, I'm sure they would probably think either I'm a kook or they believe me, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
But
interesting. Yeah. So, okay, so who are you bonding with over this? I guess I wonder
your audience,
people like me,
my audience, you know, other podcasters.
Yeah. When did you decide to go out and say, you know what, I'm going to start talking about this publicly?
Ooh. Yeah, that's another thing altogether. When I got my first home computer, man, I couldn't even tell you how far back that was, but DOS had just ended, and you know, we were in the world of AOL and you know, dial up and you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You can remember back that time, you know, crazy times. I got into doing other things with like SETI. I had went out and actually bought a computer to set up to work with SETI.
Wow.
On their listening to space, you know.
Was that just something people could do? You could just join the mission to contact back
home
then?
Home SETI, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you were doing that.
I had it set up. It ran 24/7. So yeah.
Did you ever anything come in?
I have no idea.
What was the point of this home setup?
It was there, though. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but I mean,
what were you thinking?
Spikes.
I mean, what were you thinking back then? Were you actively on the mission to get more of what they gave you the first time? Or were you just, I'm just going to do it and see what happens? I mean,
I was actually I was hoping that they would come back. I wondered if they would come back. I didn't know from one day to the next or one night to the next if I'd wake up and have the same scenario happen again. You know, obviously not, you know, not to that extent, but, you know, I have had missing time, different other things, you know, has happened. Of course, I put, you know, but there again, I put a lot of, I have a lot of other theories about certain things like that, you know, that have come up, you know, explanations, so to speak. So, yeah.
Interesting. So
it's not all about the ET, you know.
Oh, wait,
that's a
minute.
Whole separate issue.
Do you think it's more because you were, yeah, you were talking about wormholes before,
right?
And portals and that kind of thing.
Right.
If it's not about the ETs,
it's a cosmic. It's a never-ending galaxy, cosmic kind of thing. Yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I know. We could do 10 more episodes on that.
Absolutely,
I'm sure. Yeah, you know what? People need to tap into Clarence Mitchell for the non-UFO stuff. I mean, what's going on? I think you are overset. You're too much in the market. But you know what? The thing that's great about you, Clarence, and again, I was going to go into this every single time I talk to people in this space. I go, okay, are they going to tell me something new? I mean, I see a picture of an alien. I see a flying saucer. You know, we see Hollywood. I just don't even understand how we can keep making movies about this all the time. From a distance, I'm judging that. Right. But then, of course, when I speak to someone firsthand and I feel there is there's just so many interesting things about this.
There is. Absolutely.
And you've dedicated your life to it. I mean, are you still doing episodes of Closer Encounters?
I actually, at the end of this month, and it's funny you asked that. I'm building a new webpage as we speak.
Oh, great.
And I am going back to my roots on Blog Talk Radio. I'm to the old days. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With the call-in show.
With
and
the call-in show, the number you can dial and talk to me and the whole nine yards.
Yo.
Plus, I'm still going to go live, but yeah. I'm definitely going back to the old roots. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm definitely excited to we'll promote the existing web presence that you have when this thing comes out. And people can see Closer Encounter Radio, the Facebook page, facebook.com/ Closer Encounters Radio. Clarence, also, okay, so before, you know, we get into I feel there is so much more we can get into, and I'm definitely gonna have you back to delve into this even further. Tell me this, you have the SETI machine set up, you're waiting for contact.
Right.
What was it that got you into the public sphere beyond that? You have your home computer.
Yeah, I also talked to the astronauts, the ones that got killed coming back, unfortunately. They did their first live deal when they were up in the space shuttle and, you know, up there. And I actually got to communicate with them online, you know, and talk to them. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And unfortunately, they died coming back in, you know. To
yeah.
Sad.
What were you trying to, were you in that conversation looking for signs of extraterrestrial life? Did they tell you they were seeing things up there?
Yeah, I mean, space is space. You know what I mean? It's like, to me,
it's just interesting.
Point, everything was about space. I mean, that's all there was to it for me, you know, the moon, the sun, the Mercury, I wanted to know about everything and everything and what does what, and, you know, I mean, that's, you know, because my whole thing was, where do we come from? I mean, that's, you know, the bottom, you know, probably the first question anyone ever asked, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah, I, you know, do you mentioned, you mentioned earlier the idea of your father being a pastor and the traditional stories about our origins. And,
right.
You know, I mean, that's why you have great guys like the sponsor of our event that we co-hosted at Forgery Unmasked by Watchers Talk, Paul Anthony Wallace, who was in the religious space.
Yeah,
decided to be open-minded enough looking at the anomalies in the Bible and say, well, you know what? I think extraterrestrials
I've done
better,
that too. Yeah.
Better. So you've looked at the anomalies and also it makes more sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did a few shows. If you actually go to my YouTube channel, or well,
Yeah, we'll link people to that.
Yeah, well, that's the second YouTube. My first YouTube channel, which was just Clarence Mitchell.
Oh, okay.
But it still had the name Closer Encounters, you know, on the description. but I did segments about UFOs and the Bible relation, you know? Yeah. And I did that for a short time. And then I went on to other things, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the telepathic thing, just thinking about the burning bush and the idea of these stories, it seems that, you know, you don't actually have to speak to God. Doesn't even seem that there's when you're reading about the encounters, it seems like it's telepathic communication. No. Very similar traits going on. Who and what we are. I mean, do you buy into the theory at all that we have extraterrestrial roots? That
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where it all comes from. Yeah. Absolutely.
So looking back on that creature you saw in your room, was it a different species of you? Was it a more higher evolved you coming back to visit the present you? What do you think it was?
I actually believe that. Well, here again, see, I don't know the lifespan of aliens or ET or the grays. Okay.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned, and I still highly talk about the grays because they are the ones that I had contact with, where some people will tell you there's thousands of different species, or, you know, there's so many, you know, hundreds of species or whatever. I've only dealt with the grays. So to me, the gray was the only one that ever existed. If you understand what I'm saying, you know, there was no other alien out there except the grays. That was my deal.
Yeah. You know?
So when people talked about
the Arcturians and the Pleiadians,
right, I'm like, you have no clue.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Huh. And you think the grays might be, I mean, the grays are brought, do you think they have the same DNA as us? In some level, or a different version of it?
To an extent. It's always been my belief, and it's really kind of hard to explain, but here we go back to the ancient alien kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where I think there was more than one species of gray or ET, and they each had their own little domain on Earth that they did their experiments with. And that's what I think, you know, how we became who we are, you know. And this also explains certain certain things that we have, like, for instance, blood types, right? Why there's so many different blood types. Why is there the special blood that they call the alien blood, you know, with the RH factor being positive or negative,
right?
You know, yeah, those kind of things.
These theories are so interesting, and of course, we sum up to. I mean, look, wait, there's so much more because we didn't even talk about Bob Lazar. What's going on there? Also, yeah, we need to do a full episode where I just name names and you just take them apart. That's what I want. That's my, just because I encounter so much of this and reading it, it is hard to discern what's real, what isn't, who's legit. We'll have to do that. Well,
you know, here's the thing, though. A lot of this, you have to keep this in the back of your mind, only because I've been doing this for so long. I don't like ripping people apart. I really don't.
No, of course. I don't think you've got, and I say that knowing that, again, you're soulful.
Right. But, you know, when it comes to certain people, like you say, you name names and stuff, and I laugh and I chuckle because I know what they've done, and I've known, you know.
You've actually lived through the history of them in the scene.
Right,
you've seen it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so look, I mean, hey, everybody, Clarence Mitchell has quite a few stories to tell, has the experience. I'm so glad you got on that computer and started to Well, actually, we didn't even really talk about why you became a broadcaster, though.
Oh, well, okay. That's really simple. And in fact, after a number of years of being online and researching and doing whatever, and I became more adept with the biblical senses. And, you know, I mean, I went all over the place, you know, studying about ancient texts and different things like that. Ancient alien theory was something I was doing before the show even came about.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric Von Daniken's book, I read probably four times. Okay.
Yeah.
That really touched me. Okay. So that's what got me started in on that stuff. Thank God for Eric Von Daniken.
Yes.
You know,
Chariots of the Gods, read it.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
Number one book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy Grail. But anyway, so yeah, I went down all that avenue in that. And it wasn't until I actually became a member of the Ancient Alien Theory group on Facebook that I actually started coming out more about my episode, you know, and stuff like that. And of course, that all comes after I've already talked to my mom and,
wow,
you know, so on and so forth. So I became more open about it. I became more comfortable about it, being around people who believe more, you know what I'm saying? Different,
yeah,
communities and stuff like that, different groups that I became associated with. And I wasn't having such a hard time telling my story, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, we're so glad you are. I mean, I'm so glad you've shared it with me on this show. And speaking of ancient aliens, I think it's a good idea. I'm going to wrap this right now because our friends, Evan and Stephen Strong and Leah Capitale, who are at Forgery Unmasked, are starting their conference right now.
Cool.
Our ancient alien ancestry, what comes next, chapter 9, that's starting. So I want to make sure that you know, I know there's similar audience live going right now, so everybody hop onto that Crowdcast if you're registered, because that is going to be I mean, you saw from the convention, those get the Strongs and Leah Cap, I mean, those guys are doing some great research.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You think they're the good guys. And if Clarence says it, you've heard him. He's been tough. He's been
they
tough
are
on these people. No, no, he's been great. You've been great. I appreciate your soulful slashing of the great names in the business. And look, Clarence, I'm so grateful that you came on the show. I really hope to have you on again to delve more into this.
Anytime. Anytime. Yeah.
I awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Check out Closer Encounters Radio and the new website. And Clarence, let's definitely talk soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Greg.
Sure thing.
What a whirlwind conversation. I love that word, whirlwind. You know, Clarence was the first person that made me realize when you have contact with these beings, they give you special skills. Resume level special skills. I mean, I can do pretty bad presidential impressions, but to develop more empathy in a way that you didn't have before, that's pretty cool. I hope you all listen to Closer Encounters Radio. I hope you all listen to more Open Loops. Maybe they'll give us some of their special skills if we just keep looking up to the sky. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.